Hi, we're talking to George Wilson, who was a program director and I assume announcer at WTMA. When exactly were you at WTMA, George?
When we started, I did announcing and I did the morning. Well, we only had three guys when we started TMA. I don't mean start TMA, but rock and roll TMA. I worked in the morning and then Bill Walton.
Okay.
He worked from 9 to noon and then afternoon drive. And Doug somebody, I can't remember his last name.
Doug Randall?
Yeah, Doug Randall. He wound up managing a station in town there. I don't remember what the call letters were.
Yeah, 1450 WQSN.
Yeah.
He was at WTMA for a long time.
When we started, it was just the three of us.
Now, what year did WTMA become top 40?
I really don't know. I think it was in the early 60s. But when I went there, I actually came back to Charleston to work at WHAN, where I had worked a long time ago. I started in radio at HAN.
1340.
Harry Weaver, I think, was his
name. Yeah, Harry Weaver, yes.
I had worked for Harry when I first started in the business, and then Jack Gale, who worked at TMA at that time, helped me get started. He did a lot of voices. I used some of his tapes for my audition and got a job from HAN at that time.
Are you from South Carolina?
No, I'm from New York, but I played baseball for the Charleston Rebels, if you know who they were, way back when. It was a farm team.
Mm-hmm. And so you ended up in Charleston, and after, I guess, your baseball career ended, you decided to get on the radio?
Exactly. I remember I used to speak at NAB when I was the head of Bartell. And they say, how'd you get started in radio? I said, well, first you'd be a lousy baseball player.
So you went to work for Harry Weaver at WHAN. That was before they changed call letters to WOKE.
Right. I went back to Charleston to work for Harry Weaver, and I got there. I was working in Denver. I was with PD station in Denver, anyway, and I was drinking a lot, and I wanted to take a rest. So I called Harry, and I said, I'll come back and work for you for 6 months. I was drinking a lot, and I wanted to stop that and get my life back in order. And so I rented a house in Isle of Palms, and I came back. And the first week I was there, Harry told me that not only would I have to do the morning thing, but I'd have to come in on Saturday and work from sign on until noon and then come back again. I said, what? That's not why I came here. So I walked down the corner from the old HAN, and there was an Army-Navy store there. Two brothers, Abe and Joe Dumas, had an Army-Navy store. I used to know them well. And so what are you going to do? I said, well, I came back to rest and get myself in shape. And so they said, well, come on, we know this guy Chuck Smith real good at WTMA. And they were, at that time, I don't know if you're familiar with the Ape in Jacksonville, WTMA was last. I think there were six stations in town at that time, and TMA was last with the Ape in Jacksonville beating them.
Wow.
They were having a tough time. So anyway, they took me over to Chuck Smith, and they said, George is a well-known radio guy now, and he said, well, what can you do? I said, well, if you leave me alone, I said, I'm very upset with Harry Weaver. I said, we'll be number one in the market within about 6 or 7 months. So he said, what makes you think that? He said, we've been doing a lot of stuff. Anyway, I gave him a couple names, a guy named Don Burden, who ran the star stations at that time, and Dick Wheeler, who was the guy I worked for in Denver just before I came there. And I said, you call him and ask him. So he did, and he hired me. And then I put Walton and Doug Randall on, and the three of us did the station. And back in those days, there was a Hooper and a Pulse. Do you remember those days?
Oh, yeah, before Arbitron.
Well, we did all kind of junk. Would answer your phone, don't say hello, say I listen to the mighty TMA. Every kind of gimmick there was, I did it right away because I was so upset with Harry Weaver. So about 30 days after we were gone, Hooper came in. I'd been out partying, and I got off the air, and Chuck Smith yelled upstairs. The control room was upstairs in the Dock Street Theater building. Coming out of my office right away, and I said, I got some stuff to do. I'll be down in a while. I don't feel good or something. Anyway. So his office was way in the back of the building. I went back into the office, and he said, take down your pants. And I said, what? I said, Chuck, I don't feel good. Leave me alone. I'll see you in a while. He said, no, look at this. And he threw the Hooper across the desk at me, and we had made number one in 30 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you go back in those days, you can. It was quite a deal for him.
So why did he want to take your pants down?
He wanted to kiss my butt. That's not exactly the word.
I understand.
So that's how we started that.
What about the old folks at WTMA, the old announcers, the old last place regime?
The only ones I kept were Walton and Doug Randall. Just three of us ran the station for about 6-7 months, I think. Bill Taylor came in. Bobby D, a guy from the Ape that everybody knew. There weren't many jocks when I was there. We kept the same guys pretty much.
So how long were you at WTMA?
To be honest, I don't remember how long I stayed.
Maybe 2 or 3 years?
No, I wasn't there that long. I went up to Spartanburg for a while for a guy. Chuck was buying a station in Jacksonville, Florida. So I went up there till he got that one done. When that one got approved from the FCC, then I went to Jacksonville for Chuck and took some of the guys down there. We opened a WMRB or WMBR, maybe. I'm not sure which. I worked both MBR and BMRB. One was in Greenville, one was in Jacksonville. I took D and I think Bill Taylor, I'm not sure, a couple of guys from Charleston down there. We did a lot of gimmicks. We had that Indian. We buried him with a bunch of snakes up in North Charleston in a shopping center. They called him Wachikanoka. That worked very big. People would come and pay a quarter and look down at this guy. We buried him in a coffin and put about 50 rattlesnakes and boas and I don't know what all. Anyhow, it was a big gimmick. Drew a lot of people.
So he got out okay, huh?
He did it all over the country. It was a big gimmick, yeah. I know Burkhart ran it and some of the other radio guys. Blore, Chuck Blore had him, I think.
I guess when you went to the Top 40 format, Charleston had not had a Top 40 station before.
Not as such. No, the closest thing probably would have been Jack Gale. Jack is, without exception, the best morning man that's ever been in radio. When I had the station in L.A. much later on, I had some problems in the morning, and I just wasn't thinking what I was doing. I would have had Jack Gale come up there. He was without a doubt. Anybody, I don't guess be too many people would be old enough to remember Jack, but a lot of people remember him from Charlotte, but he had big days in Baltimore and Boston. He was an actual killer on the radio. I was in it for many, many years, man. He's the best I ever heard.
WTMA evidently was pretty hot when Jack Gale was here, and then when he left, something must have happened or something didn't happen, and the station slid, and luckily you came along and were in the right place at the right time.
I didn't keep up too much of what happened in between. You know, it was Charleston radio at that time, you know. And I don't even know how long the mighty TMA lasted after we all left. I left Chuck Smith after about a year and a half in Jacksonville and went over to New Orleans, and I took Taylor and Bobby D and a couple other guys. Lee Baby Sims, you know about Lee Baby Sims?
No, I don't.
Lee Baby Sims, probably the best word picture painter in the radio industry.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's working right now in San Francisco, as a matter of fact. Because of the terrible influence on my life by Jack Gale, I was singing a commercial one night, the night that I found the Lee Baby. I was upstairs singing a commercial, and I didn't want anybody around, so I did it after hours. And I came out from the Dock Street Theater building, and there was this kid sitting on the curb. He said, "You working there?" I said, "Yeah." I always wanted to work. Oh, anyway, I took him. I said, "Come down here tomorrow." I took him in the studio. I think Doug Randall took him and taught him how to do some stuff. And we weren't on 24 hours. We were only on until midnight or something. So I had him teach Lee, and Lee Baby started all nights in TMA. And of course, he's one of the giants of the industry right now.
You kept the transmitter on after midnight to put this guy on the radio?
Yep. And it was good for me because I was doing the mornings and I would be out drinking all night. So I didn't want to have to worry about getting there and sign the station on. Somebody will be there.
What did you remember most about working in Charleston?
Well, first of all, if I had my druthers, I'd probably live in Charleston today. Between the baseball and the radio, I had quite a few friends there. One of my best friends for a long, long time was an ex-Giant football player named Big John Kennedy. He had a bar down on Water Street, if you remember. He was an all-pro football player for the New York Giants for years. I don't know. I just have a lot of great memories from Charleston. Remember J.L. Goldberg Furniture Company?
Oh, yeah, Sonny Goldberg.
Sonny Goldberg. Well, Jack Gale had made Sonny Goldberg famous. You know the news guy Paul Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sonny Goldberg was like Paul Harvey. Jack Gale made him a star. So his ego, like Harvey, made him go on TV. Well, Sonny Goldberg didn't look like Sonny Goldberg sounded. Like Paul Harvey doesn't look like Paul Harvey, you know. I always thought one of the big mistakes you could do with a radio guy was put him where people could see him, because everybody paints a different picture of the guy on the radio than what he really is. And once you saw Sonny, oh my God, all the illusions were going up in smoke, right? So Sonny talked to me about doing a thing. Well, I stayed awake, did a marathon, stayed awake in his window. I think we're there 3 or 4 days. It was a long time to be awake, I can tell you that. That worked pretty good. So the thing about radio with me was, and I worked 18 cities and had success in all but one. And what I always thought was that everybody made it too damn confusing. Radio is pretty damn simple. I worked for one guy, Burden, who told me a long time ago, he said, don't ever try to educate anybody with a radio station. He said, if you want people to listen to you, give them what they want, not what you want. And don't ever overestimate the taste of your audience. And he said, a lot of people are always trying to make people bring them up. And he said, they like what they like and let them and please their taste, you know. A program on radio stations was never a difficult task for me. I learned from very good people, and the simplicity of it was the best part of it, I thought. When you get all complicated and try to make people do stuff that they can't do and try to make people listen to stuff that they really don't care about. If you're going to be in the music radio business, you have to mirror the taste of the community. And then, like today, you got all these stations playing music off the satellite, and it's all same mishmash. Well, the people in Charleston, South Carolina, don't like the same music that the people here in Albuquerque, New Mexico like. We have a lot of Native Americans. We got a lot of Mexican people here. You know, just because you're 60 years old doesn't mean that you like a certain type of music. And we got to find out what the people like and keep every city, every station to match the taste of the people. That's all. And what they are interested in. Fortunately or unfortunately, I was a big drinker, and I spent a lot of time in bars. And as soon as people drink a little bit, you can sure as hell find out a lot about what they think.
Audience research every night, huh?
Every night. Every day. We went to a part back the show with Elvis on the back of a hay truck in the middle of College Park Baseball Stadium. Can you imagine that?
So that was while you were here at WTMA?
Yeah. Can you imagine? Elvis Presley on the back of a truck performing, middle of a baseball field.
What was the turnout like?
Oh, it was fabulous. Right after Elvis did the thing at the ballpark, he was just getting started, I think. And then they had all the Sun guys. They had Johnny Cash and Warren Smith, Jerry Lee Lewis. What a show. Johnny Horton, Carl Perkins was there. All at that thing in Charleston. Talk about a big show. Boy, that was, for those days, that was quite a deal.
Do you remember how you programmed the radio station then, what your philosophy was?
Oh, yeah. We had a pretty strict list of music. I did most of the music for the guys, formatted the music, most of it. We probably had a list of maybe 60, 70 records, and then we had what we called extras. See, like in Charleston, I played quite a bit of black music. Nobody had ever done that before that I was aware of. I don't think so. And I played some country stuff because in Charleston, you know, you got some black people and you got some country people. And the music mix was a little different for what had been in Charleston. And at that time, we paid a lot of attention to North Charleston, to the Navy base and that kind of stuff. I don't know how to describe the music because it wasn't typical Top 40 as most people would understand Top 40. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It was tailored for the city. That's the way radio stations used to be.
Exactly. That's what it was. I remember we played Cookie and the Cupcakes. Remember that record at all or not?
No.
Anyway, it's called Matilda. It was the worst damn record you ever heard in your life. And it made number one in about 3 weeks. People loved it.
Hmm.
You know? I played it for a couple of friends and went on the phone. I said, here, I got a record. You better jump on it. What are you, crazy? Play that crap, you know? And it just, boom, number one. It was wonderful. But anyhow, it was a lot of stuff like that, that with black crossovers, country crossovers. I don't know. It's just a reflection of the people, I thought, you know. But it wasn't a typical 30 list over and over, you know, like they do. But I never had a station like that anyway. I didn't believe in that stuff.
What are some of the other radio stations and markets you worked at after WTMA?
After TMA.
You went to Jacksonville, you mentioned.
I went to Jacksonville, then I went to New Orleans, then I went to Charlotte, North Carolina. Al, there's a funny story for you. I went to Charlotte. We took a station for a guy named Henderson Belk. He had a bunch of department stores or something there. And we went to Charlotte, WIST. Thing jumped. We had phenomenal success there. So all of a sudden, here comes Stan Kaplan and Jack Gale buying out a station. So I get a phone call. It's Stan Kaplan. So he said, well, you have two choices. You either come to work with us or you go to Baltimore to WITH. So I left WIST and went there. And Jack Gale and Kaplan really did a good job in Charlotte. Big Ways, you remember that
stuff? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I left there. And I went from there to Stan had already made arrangements for me to go to Baltimore. So I went to ITH in Baltimore. And I went from Baltimore to Philadelphia, Philadelphia to Milwaukee. And in Milwaukee, while I was there, I was the PD. Then I wound up being the manager, and then I got to be the president of that company. It was called Bartell. I don't know if you know that company.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went from Bartell to the consulting business for a while, and then I went to L.A., managed a station in L.A. for 10 years.
Which station's that?
It was called KIQQ. It's not there anymore.
Oh, it was a rock station, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was owned by a guy named Bill Drake. We bought it from Bill. You remember Drake, the programmer?
Oh, yeah. It was K100, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what it was when I changed it to KIQQ.
So what's Drake like?
For the reputation he has, he certainly never beat us in any market. I was against him. I had some pretty good PDs, of course. I had Buzzy Bennett, a lot of good guys. Drake was okay, but I wouldn't write home to Mom about him. Let me just say, if I had to make my living, I'd like to go up against him.
So you don't think too much about the Drake format?
Oh, I thought it was terrible. Ruin more good disc jockeys, and you read the 3x5 cards and said this and give the time and temperature, and away you go. Well, I think there's a little more radio than that. Well, anyway, we killed them in San Diego. KCBQ just went, we just sent him flying. He had a great PD there, Ron Jacobs. I don't know if you remember Ron.
Mm-hmm.
Ron said he wanted to go live in beautiful Hawaii.
And that's where he is today. So do you look back fondly on your time in Charleston at WTMA?
If not the highlight, one of them for sure. Yeah, I love Charleston. I love TMA. I love Chuck Smith. He was a great guy to work for. He left you alone, you know. And we had a lot of fun, had a lot of success there.
What were WTMA's technical facilities like then? Did you have the reverb on the radio station then?
No, I didn't believe in it. I never had that anywhere. The only thing I ever did, and I did it every station, I wanted the radio station to appeal to women. The stations, all my stations always were hardcore kids at nighttime, and the parents watched TV, and the kids listened to the radio. So we focused the station directly at kids at nighttime. And during the day, I always had an older guy in the middays and when the housewives were there, because they, as you probably know, all jocks like to talk on the phone to the people, and I wanted somebody old who could relate with the housewives, not a young guy on. And a lot of stations that played rock and roll had young people screaming and yelling, and I wanted somebody that was older that could relate to the people easier, you know. And the housewives were a predominant thing for us. In fact, I had a station in Milwaukee once. I changed the colors to For Women Only. Yeah, that lasted about 3 weeks. Anyway, well, what I did with TMA and all of them was tune the transmitter. You know, women don't like highs. It's ear-piercing. So I would always have the engineer clip the highs and add some bottom to it. But I did that at every station I ever went to.
George, do you mind if I ask how old you are now?
75 last week. I had all my kids from all, and my grandkids from all over the country. We had 15 for dinner last Thursday night. My son was a disc jockey for years, and he came in from L.A.
What's your son's name?
On the radio is G.W. McCoy, and George Jr.
What have you been doing once you left the station in Los Angeles? Is that when you decided to retire, when you left KIQQ?
I retired for about 3 years, went down to Palm Springs for a while, and I had young kids, and I didn't want to put them in school in Palm Springs, so I went back to Denver and put them in a school up there. And then Carl Como, who was guy that used to manage Detroit and a couple other stations for me in the old Bartell days. So he owned the station down here, and he called me up and said, how about come down and work? So I came down with him, and he ran the FM, and I ran the AM, and I did a big band, Peggy Lee, Frank Sinatra type of station. Somewhere around 40% of the people in Albuquerque are retired. But they had a big promotion here many years ago for retirees out of New York, and there was a big New York population, and they all remember the old WNEW in New York from our days. Anyhow, we did that, and it was quite successful, and then they sold us. Carl didn't like Albuquerque, so he went on back down to Florida, and some guy bought it, and they didn't have any idea what they were doing, so it got annoying, and I quit. That was about 9 years ago, I guess, so I've been here for 9 years.
So just taking it easy and enjoying the nice weather, huh?
Pretty good. Yeah, it's a good town to live in, nice and dry.
Do you ever miss working in radio?
Nah, I thought about it. A couple guys called. I'm too old. Radio's passed me by. I couldn't deal with what it is today and the suits and tie guys and all that stuff. It's just not my cup of tea anymore. There's no showbiz or guys like that. It's all bean counters and lawyers, and they don't know anything about radio, and they just buy up a whole bunch of stations and put them all together and get a big number to sell advertising by. But that's the way it is. So when you get old, you get kind of crotchety, you know.
Get set in your ways, huh?
You got it.
Well, George, thank you for coming to Charleston, and on behalf of all the people from WTMA now who are still feeling part of the legacy that you started when you made the station a top 40 radio station back around 1960 or so, and we do appreciate your hard work.
Nice to talk to you, John.